17 years ago this weekend, Linda Smith was found dead in her Champaign home, a victim of foul play. 17 years later, police still are seeking answers. Is DNA the next hope in the investigation? Carol Vorel, in her fifth Cold Case podcast, revisits the 2001 murder and tells us where police are in their investigation. Meanwhile, the family waits. We just hold on to the good times and just pray that something comes up and this guy gets caught, family members tell Carol. We'll be back with Carol's podcast after this. Hey, Jim Rosso, News Gazette Media Vice President, reminding you that we have a ton of podcasts available at newsgazette.com every day of the week. From Dave Gentry's Morning Show to Scott Beatty's News Hour to Brian Barnhart's Penny for Your Thoughts. Head to our website, newsgazette.com, and search for podcasts.
17 years ago, Linda Smith of Champaign was so close to becoming a great-grandmother for the first time, only months away, something she was really looking forward to. She was living with heart issues, recovering from bypass surgery at the time. Teresa Dilley remembers her mother as very warm, someone who loved people, and who was crazy about her grandchildren.
She was a good mom. She was crazy about her grandkids. She had quite a few, was expecting her first great-grandchild, and she just loved being around people and talking. Even in bad health, she was still good-natured.
And she worked at Kmart for like 20-some years?
Oh, yeah, probably closer to 30, yeah. And she loved her customers. She loved talking to people. That's where she made a lot of friends, and yeah, she was a talker.
Linda's first great-grandchild was also Teresa's first grandchild, but Linda would never get to enjoy her great-granddaughter. Linda Smith went to bed in her longtime home at 302 Paul Avenue in Wilbur Heights, just north of Champaign, on a September night 17 years ago, and at the age of 59, would never wake up the next morning. A heartbreaking discovery would begin with a phone call from a neighbor to 911 early on the morning of September 22, 2001, setting off a case full of mystery and a series of twists and turns that no one would see coming and make heartbreak only ache more. Head of the Investigations Division at the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, Lieutenant Kurt Apperson, tells you about that initial phone call.
On September 22, 2001, at approximately 5:50 a.m., a neighbor noticed that there was a fire at 302 Paul Avenue, which is obviously Linda Smith's house. That neighbor called 911. Firefighters made entry into the residence. They found Linda Smith deceased on her bed in the bedroom. The investigation confirmed that it was arson. They found what we call pour patterns inside the residence and also a can of gasoline nearby outside that obviously was most likely used as accelerant.
As routine, an autopsy was conducted into Linda's death. The results revealed she passed away due to a heart attack. But the results also showed something no one would ever imagine. She had also been sexually assaulted.
So what possibly could have happened is, you know, he's motivated by sex, and he's also wants to control a situation, and with force or the threat of force, and during the course of the sexual assault, most likely Ms. Smith had some medical issue, which obviously the coroner's report indicates it was a heart attack, so she basically had a heart attack during this assault. And again, I can't speak for him, but obviously he probably came to the conclusion that, hey, someone's going to find her, I need to cover up my tracks, as you say, and the best way to do that, or maybe, look, he remembers seeing a can of gas outside the residence or something like that, and the best way to do that, in his mind, to conceal the crime that he committed was to set fire to the residence.
Unthinkable. How could someone do this to Linda Smith?
She was a hard worker. She had a big heart. And she didn't deserve to die this way.
The small fire had been put out quickly by the Eastern Prairie firefighters, but no fingerprints were recovered. However, despite the fire, investigators were able to collect DNA evidence left by the attacker.
Also, during the course of the autopsy, the suspect's DNA was collected from her body. And this collection was stemmed from doing what we call a sexual assault kit. And that sexual assault kit was later taken to Illinois State Police Crime Lab for the sole purpose of identifying DNA, the suspect's DNA profile.
If you had a chance to say something to the man who did this to your mother, what would you like to say to him?
I hope you get what's coming to you. and I'm sure you will. And I'll be there to make sure that you sit in prison for a long time, hopefully till you die.
About a year later, another twist in the case.
And that DNA profile later in November 2002, that's when we learned it was linked to a aggravated criminal sexual assault in Carbondale, as well as one in Silver Spring, Maryland, which is in Montgomery County, Maryland. So that's when we realized that, okay, our offender has offended three times. One was the murder of Linda Smith, another one was a sexual assault of a person in Carbondale, and one in Montgomery County, Maryland.
What was the timing of the three assaults? Like, which was first, second, third?
So the one that occurred in Silver Springs, or Silver Spring, I think is what it's called, is what occurred in July 5th in 1995. The Carbondale one happened in August 8th of 2001.
That's about a month and a half before he attacked Linda Smith in Champaign. And there's more. A serial rapist, and something in common among all three sexual assaults.
So basically you have, obviously, Champaign has the University of Illinois. Carbondale has SIU. Silver Spring, Maryland has Maryland University. So those are some of the things that are in common, right? So you have three universities. What else you have in common is, and people that know Wilbur Heights, there's train tracks. And in Carbondale, in the victim's house, she lived north Carbondale, and in her house kind of was right along US 51. And to the east of US 51 is also railroad tracks. And those railroad tracks, looking at maps, appears that one could get on a train in Champaign and essentially ride the train down to Carbondale, okay? So the theories back then was, okay, and still are today, is it someone that has ties to all three communities? And could those ties be through colleges? Or is this person a transient? Is this person used the train tracks as a mode of transportation and then make stops? And, you know, there's a switchyard right by Wilbur Heights. And did the train also stop in Carbondale? And then he just saw this as an opportunity. Because the victims, you know, Linda Smith was 59. The one in Carbondale was 26. The one in Maryland was 49 years of age. So there's no specific age or race that he's targeting. So, you know, is this, you know, opportunity type thing? So that's definitely a possibility. Years ago, they actually found a person that had ties in Maryland, Carbondale, and Champaign, and they located that subject out of state. He consented to a DNA swab, and he was eliminated by that. So those are the things that we've definitely taken into consideration, and so far we've struck out on it.
Do you have any sense that this might be a local guy or just really a transient?
Obviously, he offended in three communities. And he started in Silver Springs, Maryland in 95. Then in 2001, we know he's in Carbondale because he offends there on August 8th. And then obviously on September 22nd, we know he's in Champaign and he offends there. So obviously that tells you that the guy moves around. And the common thing, again, is the train tracks and universities. So I think a lot of people in the past and currently are moving more towards the train track theory of him being more of a transient. And everybody knows it's not uncommon to see in a Wilbur Heights area, in between train tracks, there's an area there where a lot of homeless people used to stay back then. So he may have stayed in that area. He may not have. I don't know. But obviously, if that theory is true, you know, at some point in time, he gets off the train tracks. Like I said, there's a switchyard right there. He walks around. Maybe he's heading to the mall, and he sees Linda Smith, and he sees an opportunity. Maybe that's the same case within Carbondale. There's train tracks. There's a two-lane highway, and then there's a victim's residence right there. Maybe the train was stopped there, saw an opportunity, and went for it. So I think that, in my mind, I think the train tracks are powerful, looking over this as a whole. But you obviously cannot eliminate the other possibilities, meaning the universities. Is there any family that is associated between all three places, like they went and swabbed the potential suspect in the past. So those three things, you definitely don't want to put yourself in a box. You got to think wide open and think of all those possibilities. I would say that most likely that, you know, regardless, as this person's probably no longer in this area.
And still, something else, more, that makes this case so hard to solve and adds to the mystery. The first known assault by this rapist occurred in Maryland in July of 1995, then a 6-year gap, before the next one in Carbondale in August of 2001. And then he assaulted Linda Smith in Champaign in September of 2001. Then 17 years pass to today. No new DNA hits. No further known attacks. Why the large gaps between assaults? Quite unusual.
That's a concerning thing. So, as you said, the last time the offender offended was in 2001. So as an investigator, what does that mean? So there's obviously a lot of possibilities. I mean, he could be out of the country. He could be deceased. Because the thing about this is he's obviously, I think we all agree, right, that he's sexually motivated. And for him to offend, and then offend, and not offend is surprising. Obviously, he's a serial rapist. For them to stop is very, very uncommon. So yeah. What made him stop? And it's not... I would conclude that it's not his choice. It's something that's happened to him, whether he's deceased or incarcerated or maybe he moved out of the country. I don't know.
So I would think that if he were arrested for another crime, you know, would they take his DNA?
So the way it kind of goes is basically if you're arrested, and some states have. I mean, some states have, like, upon your arrest, you know, you may have to provide your DNA. However, I mean, usually it comes in Illinois, usually it's upon conviction or probation or something like that. So it's not going to be just an arrest. It's going to be him submitting his DNA for whatever reason that led to that arrest. And that's what we're shooting for and that's what we're hoping for. No matter where the DNA hits, we'll go. If we get this person identified, you know, everything will fall into place. And we'll be able to build that foundation of why. Whatever. I mean, there's a reason why he didn't offend. For him to sit there and control a person for 3 hours and 3.5 hours and sexually assaulting her repeatedly, you know, that tells you a lot, right? I mean, obviously he's a very sick and very bad person, and but it tells you the commitment, that all that stuff, and then it's all sudden it falls off. It doesn't make sense. I mean, you would assume that this person would most likely reoffend and past. The Linda Smith case. Maybe he's offended prior to that too. I mean, there might be some jurisdictions going through their cold cases and find, hey, you know, we never submitted this exhibit to the lab for DNA now, and then maybe we go back and they find it, and maybe that helps us out too. So I mean, there's a lot of possibilities.
It's all so hard for Teresa and her two sisters and brother, along with the rest of her family, to absorb and to think about all the things her mother has missed out on since then, including a second great-granddaughter. They turned to family to get through.
Well, we always think she's with us in spirit, so we just hold on to the good times and just pray that something comes up and this guy gets caught. There's no greater loss than your mother, either. She's like the rock.
How are you coping with the anger that you have to feel along with your loss?
A lot of anger. But you just, you know, we all have families. You just keep, take it one day at a time and talk to your families if you have to, get it off your shoulders and be strong for each other.
So investigators have a DNA profile that matches three sexual assaults in two states, but still don't know who it belongs to. DNA with no identification. Very similar to the kind of evidence the Champaign County Sheriff's Office dealt with in the 2009 murder of Holly Cassano and Muhammad. After 9 years of attempts to get a match and ID, advances in DNA technology in combination with genetic analysis by Parabon Nanolabs in Virginia finally broke the case open and led to a suspect, 30-year-old Michael Henslick, who police say confessed to the fatal stabbing. Is this kind of analysis something investigators plan to pursue in the Linda Smith case? Lieutenant Apperson.
This is an open and active investigation, and I think it'd be ill-advised if I sit there and broadcast what we're going to do. But every option's on the table when it comes to DNA, when it comes to even general police work. I mean, whatever we do that we think puts us in a position to identify this person, the suspect, and solve this crime, we're going to do.
So are you in contact with the investigators and at the other two sides?
I am in more contact with the Carbondale Police Department than I am with the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. Everything that we do in this case and everything that they do in their case, we communicate. Because we don't want to double our efforts, and obviously we have the murder and they have the aggravated criminal sexual assault, home invasion. We definitely bounce things off of each other prior to going and doing stuff. And actually, you know, when I was talking about investigators previously going out of state to swab and to obtain DNA sample from a potential suspect, Carbondale Police Department was with us.
The victims from Carbondale and Montgomery County, Maryland, survived and were able to provide a description of the serial rapist and killer to police.
With the other two surviving victims, there's things that we know and we've learned from that. It's number one, he used the threat of force or force. We know that he's a black male, he's 25 to 27 years of age, he's 5'7", described as having a thin build, 150 to 160 pounds. In the case in Maryland, he sexually assaulted the victim for a period of 3 hours. He was armed with a knife. The suspect smelled of liquor and cigarettes. He made similar statements to the victims in Silver Spring and in Carbondale. Both victims gave very similar descriptions of physical descriptions.
So, who is the serial rapist? Where is he? Is he even still alive? Why the gaps between offenses? Investigators continue to turn to you for help in solving this case. It may help to think back to the September 11th terrorist attacks against our country in 2001. Then, move ahead to about a week and a half later, on September 22nd, early Saturday morning. That's when Linda Smith was assaulted. Did you see something, hear something, do you know something? Lieutenant Apperson says even if you remember something that you think police already know, tell it to them anyway.
Did you see anybody in that area that obviously meets the description of a black male, 25 to 27 years old, 5'7", 150 to 160 pounds? You know, did you see anybody, maybe they were, you know, standing on a corner asking for money. Maybe they were at a local store and we have video of that person. You know, maybe it's possible that there's video of that person, even still after the length of time. Maybe if you're sitting there and you're thinking we had this with other cases is, you know, I wish I would have called and said that. Well, that's when you, right now is when you need to call us. Or, you know, oh, they probably thought about that. Or they probably talked to John who told them that. Well, that's not always the case. And some of that stuff is what really is Achilles' heel in these type of investigations where people think that we know or we should know. And I understand all that, but sometimes that person didn't come and tell us. And sometimes that person didn't say, hey, I saw a guy meeting this description or matching this description on the corner. And we don't know those things. And that could be a huge thing. You know, if you were worked on the train tracks, if you worked at a transfer place or anywhere within the community and you remember seeing this guy and maybe he was on this train and this train was heading that way or, you know, or something like that, that we definitely, then that narrows down an area where he could have went from here. If he was heading north, that would be good to know. If he was heading east, that would be good to know. So, I mean, there's a little things like that that I think if anyone has information or knowledge on, that could be very helpful with us. If you're sitting back and you know someone that matches this description or meets this description that lived in Maryland, lived in Carbondale, and lived in Champaign, or had family that lived in those three areas, I think it would be definitely, without a doubt, it'd be beneficial for us to know that. Wouldn't it be nice to have another case solved and that we're in a position right now that we need help on? And whether it's help from the community, whether it's help from another agency or another community, or, you know, a private company, we need assistance. And anytime that we get the public involved and they're involved in this case, it puts any police agency in a better position to solve the case.
I just want anybody to think about it. I know it's been a long time ago, but if you could remember anything that maybe somebody said, somebody saw something, if you think it doesn't matter, maybe it does, call and tell the investigators. The slightest little thing could actually be something to help.
Call the Investigations Division of the Champaign County Sheriff's Office at 384-1213, 384-1213, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 373-TIPS.
I just think that we're going to have to get lucky. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We're going to have to get lucky, and I think, you know, just like on the Cassano case, when you put in a lot of hard work, you generate luck. And with commitment and all that stuff, which obviously we're committed, we just need a break, and once we get that break in this case, it's all going to come together. I still believe that we're going to find this person and finding out who he is.
And finally, hopefully, justice for Linda Smith.
It'd be something we don't have to think about every day. It'd be over with. It'd be closure. We could just say, we got him, Mom.
I'm Carol Varell.